Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. Do you have a plumbing emergency? Call Four Seasons. An electrical emergency? Call Four Seasons. A heating or cooling emergency? Call Four Seasons. Same day hot water tank installation needed? Call Four Seasons. Need a whole home generator? Call Four Seasons. We guarantee same day installation on all heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical needs. And no extra charge for nights, weekends, or holidays.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Chicago, the grudge matches on the gridirons might be gone, but get ready to hit the ball and touch them all at your local Chevy dealer, where you'll find the real MVPs of SUVs. If you're thinking about rounding third and heading for home in a new Chevy, you're not alone. The right vehicle makes all the difference when it comes to safety, confidence, and comfort on the road. You saw the Chevy lineup at the auto show. Now it's time to take the next step and batter up. Need the power and durability of a Silverado? The all-weather confidence of an Equinox or Blazer? The spacious comfort of a Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban? Or the sporty city-friendly Trax? Your local Chevy dealer has exactly what you need to win the game like a pro. So don't wait. Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Browse the newest models, special offers, locate the nearest dealer, and start shopping online. Things are warming up out there, and you need a vehicle you can trust. Find yours now at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Chevy, together, let's drive.
Good morning, folks. Thursday, April the 10th, the beginning of French Quarter Fest. What an incredible day. We definitely hope that we will be out there this afternoon. In fact, we will be out there this afternoon, and we're looking forward to that. Hope to see a bunch of you out there as well. Cannot wait for this weekend. If every day is like today, it is going to be an incredible experience out there. We're looking forward to seeing. We've got a great lineup for you today at noon. We'll visit with Rafael Goyeneche, President of Metropolitan Crime Commission. We're going to dig deep into the Teneo Bill Bratton New Orleans Major Event Review and Security Recommendations. We'll talk about each and every one of those, what they mean, how can it be weaved in operationally for the city of New Orleans. Some decisions by citizens need to be made. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the DNA backlog. Looks like most of that has gone away. We had talked to Leslie Harris, councilwoman, last week. She revealed that here on this show. That's a very exciting outcome, and congratulations to everyone involved in that endeavor. Cameron Henry joins us. He's the president of Louisiana State Senate at 11:30. We'll talk about the upcoming session. With the failure of four amendments, especially Amendment Number 2, there are a number of things that are unresolved as to whether or not they're going to be able to continue on, one being the teacher pay raise. And we'll talk about that in just a minute, and I'll outline some of that for you of what you need to be watching for in this session. At 11 o'clock, Andrea Manuel, Jefferson Parish City Council District 1 candidate. She ran first with 5,722 votes, followed in second by Tim Kerner Jr., 5,648 votes. Not much of a separation there. They head to a runoff election on May the 3rd. And early voting will be starting here soon. And we'll make sure that you're aware of those dates so that you can get out and vote in a very important election relative to the leadership in Jefferson Parish. Because the Jefferson Parish Council, unlike how governance works in the city, they are the ones that really hold all the authority. And a lot, they have a lot of authority as to almost every single issue in the parish, a little bit of a different form of government than what you see in Orleans. At 10:30, Dr. Jennifer Avegno, New Orleans Health Department, joins us. We'll talk about What's going on with some of the federal funding? Some moves have already been made in the CDC. There's been some programs that have been implemented here, specifically the violence prevention program that relies on a collaborative effort of Tulane's Violence Prevention Institute, as well as the health department here. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about whether or not there'll be other sources of revenue that maybe can keep this going, and we'll dig deep through those issues. I wanted to spend just a few minutes talking about this legislative session. Obviously, the governor, in advance of this, has gone to the podium and talked a lot about what he hopes to accomplish and achieve in this session. A lot of different asks, some of which have already kind of created a little bit of friction between some folks in the bodies of the legislature and the state administration. Not uncommon, not unusual, not anything to be concerned about. That will all be hashed out during the course of this session. But one that sticks out, and we'll ask the Senate President Cameron Henry about this, is the L.A. Gator program, Louisiana Gator program, which is the program that provides money to pay for private school and other education expenses. Folks that qualify for this, they get a certain amount of money. It looks like the families here in Louisiana are very excited about this. It's reported in NOLA.com. 33,000 families have submitted applications since March 1st, according to the State Education Department, and nearly 30,000 of those applicants appears that they meet the eligibility criteria. So you have 30,000 that are basically competing for about 5,300 of these vouchers that look like, if the governor gets his way in this session, would be available. Now, the governor's asked for twice the amount of money than what the legislature had agreed to last year in this budget. And they, Cameron Henry says that this is going to have to be rectified. They're going to have to deal with this. Obviously, money's tight. A lot of different cuts coming down from the federal government to the state, which means the state has to tighten their belt to local government. And this is the push and the pull of politics, not only here in the state of Louisiana, but throughout the country. That's how it works. This flows downhill when you see these cuts being made at the federal government, things that state government has grown accustomed to, as well as local government. And then you have to see whether or not you have the necessary revenues to continue these programs moving forward. Becomes quite the challenge. We know that in the city of New Orleans right now, they are taxed. We don't know to what extent, because we can't seem to get data that would appear to be meaningful. Individuals within the administration continue to disagree with one another as to whether or not we find ourselves in a fiscal crisis or not. We don't know. We just stand by waiting to hear from somebody that's got some sense of credibility that's going to say one thing or another relative to that issue. And it's kind of a shame, because as we head into this legislative session, it would be nice to know exactly where you stand. Right? It's hard to make an ask. It's hard to go up there, make a case for anything, if you can't figure out where all of this is going. So it will be interesting to see. So we're going to have to keep our eye on the Louisiana Gator program, where it's going to be, how much it's going to be funded for. Then the other issue is the fallout of Amendment 2 and the failure of same. Is about $200 million to maintain the salary stipends for teachers and other school staffers. If the legislature does not find the $200 million for the stipend for this upcoming year, that means the teachers and school staffers will have a pay cut. And it will be interesting to see how that plays itself out. Very difficult issue for the state legislature to deal with. The teachers tend to have a very strong voice and lobby in Baton Rouge. They're well represented. The failure of that amendment was part of a whole financing arrangement to try and shift that to local government, and there would be some expenses that would be released from local government to be able to finance same. This will be a big issue in the legislature. And then, finally, one of the other issues that we really need to be looking at is insurance. That is a top-of-mind issue for Louisiana citizens. Everyone is impacted. It doesn't matter what demographic group you come from, what financial sector you live in. Everyone is bearing the brunt of very expensive homeowners, very expensive auto insurance, and flood policies that are increasing as well. Many folks have been fighting back on the flood policies and will continue to do so. And it's going to be interesting as to how this will play out. This is the traditional battle between trial lawyers and insurance companies. This is one I will be paying close attention to. Not that I've ever been, a big fan of either party. But what I am aware of is seeing folks that are legitimately hurt, seriously injured, life-altering situations through no fault of their own, through the negligence of others, and the lack of desire to pay to cover the costs of the life care plan or whatever it may be in the aftermath of these accidents, where people's lives are fundamentally, significantly altered for the rest of their life. What does that mean? Maybe you play softball once a week. That's your activity. As a result of the accident, you can't do so. So you have to go through a whole shift in your life as to what you're going to be able to do for physical activity. Some people will never be able to do any physical activity. Some folks that have kids might not ever be able to raise their child off the ground, put them on the shoulders at a Mardi Gras parade, carry them around. Not able to do so because of weight limitations as a result of their injury. Some people not going to be able to drive. Some folks not able to take care of themselves at home. Some having to get care for others. So when we think about this, just think about your one stop sign, one red light, one 20 mile an hour going down a street where someone exceeds that amount that hits you, and your life is changed and altered forever. That's what makes this so difficult of an issue to resolve, because each case is fundamentally different from the next case. And trying to craft a general rule that creates the balance and fairness to everyone, I don't envy these state legislators. It's difficult. It's really tough. But there's some things that should be fundamental, right? If you have all the necessary insurances and everything else, you should be able to recover. You paid the price. You're following the rules. There needs to be protections for those that fall in that class. I agree with the governor and others. Those that don't, that walk to the beat of a different drum, that make an intentional decision to not insure oneself, which impacts the rights and privileges of others that are on the road, they shouldn't be able to play in the game. They're out. Now, everybody wants to be fair, and it wants to be a punitive number. numbers are being bandied around. If you don't have insurance, there's a $100,000 exclusion, so you don't collect a dollar unless your injuries are greater than $100,000. Maybe that's high enough. I don't know. But they shouldn't be the beneficiary of much. They've decided to not play the rules, right? It's kind of what I've been saying all along as it relates to immigration. You play by the rules, you get all the plethora of the rights and privileges that we afford everyone else in this country. You don't play by the rules, why would we heap all of these rights and privileges on you? You've decided to walk to the beat of a different drum. And that's okay. You want to make that decision, that's fine. But everybody else in the world should not have to suffer for the intentional act, the intentional conscious decision that you made to not get insurance. So hopefully, though, that type of bill will pass. But in this balance, I certainly hope that during the time of the debate, that there's the opportunity for folks to bring forward a lot of information. Some of this is going to be anecdotal stories. Insurance, in a traditional sense, is not like it was 40 years ago. It's not nearly as standardized. You have many folks that are self-insured, organizations and businesses and agencies, both in motor vehicle insurance as well as medical insurance. Each one of those have all kinds of different rules that put their liability further and further away as a result of an auto accident, which creates a bigger cost for the insured, more out of pocket. We talk about whether or not, you know, you're going to go outside your insurance and visit doctors and you get billed the full freight as opposed to taking advantage of any of the discounts that are there, and then you negotiate with those providers after you get some award. I can understand why you would want to try and eliminate that practice. I get it. But you're going to have to put provisions in that limit the rights of these self-insured programs to move people further and further away, because some do it out of necessity. Because they don't have the money to meet that deductible or otherwise, or a larger copay, or however they structure it as a result of an auto accident, where the medical provider says, we're not paying yet. Even though we have the right to subrogation, we're not paying. And I keep bringing this up because a lot of people don't know about these provisions that appear in these self-administered group contracts. Because more and more employers are trying to move themselves further and further away from liability. It's a cost-saving measure. I get it. I understand. But everyone needs to understand in the balance of interest as to why this is happening, and we cannot afford to leave people out of the equation. And that's the difficulty of crafting this legislation. Is they all going to appear from a different point? And we have to make sure that we get as many people under the tent as possible. So these are just a couple, three, four different things you need to be looking at. Most of these are really kind of, when you think about it, can alter, are pretty impactful, I'll say. Teacher pay. You know, whether or not we continue to grow the voucher system, if that's something that we desire. Most people I know are very much in favor of it. I kind of like the voucher system myself. It's not all a rosy picture, though. We want to make sure that we're able to fund and finance those that are left behind that are still in public education. We can't afford to leave anybody behind. We got to make sure that we have that opportunity for everyone, and it's not easy. because we'll have limited assets, limited resources. And as federal cuts come down, Medicaid is one that's really, really concerning. A lot of incredibly complex financing schemes in Medicaid that may go away. It may disrupt the whole healthcare delivery system. In fact, folks are so upset and uptight about that, they are in D.C. spending millions upon millions of dollars, even advertising in Washington, D.C., about Medicaid cuts. The big fight is we need to root out inefficiencies in Medicaid, waste and fraud, but not touch benefits. Why is that important to us? I think a third of Louisiana's population is on Medicaid. So it gives you an indication of how important that is to us. We are the second highest rate of Medicaid coverage in the country. 31.9% of our constituents have Medicaid. That is a huge number, a huge impact, which would be very difficult to overcome in the situation that we find ourselves financially in this state if there are significant cuts in Medicaid. And even if it is not about benefits, even if it's about a number of other things that are there to include what was once referred to as Obamacare coverage and everything in the healthcare sector, big, big issue. We need to make sure that we get it right. So I touch on those. The session starts next week. These are things that you should be paying attention to, in my humble opinion. It's just one man's opinion. Big issues could have very positive outcomes or could have an outcome not so much. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can choose the TV you want with DirecTV.
So now they can pick out their favorite entertainment when they sign up and save money?
You mean if you like sports,
you can get a sports pack.
What about entertainment?
Entertainment pack.
It's like finding an old pizza with your favorite toppings. Which for me would be pineapple and toenails.
pineapple?
Pay for the TV you want, not the TV you don't. Genre packs starting at $34.99 a month. Visit DirectTV.com for more information. New residential customers only. Local channels vary by market. Services renew monthly unless you cancel online. Credit card required. Restrictions apply.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Welcome back, folks. There's been a growing belief that violence is a public health problem. And the Centers for Disease Control has kind of been the center of all of this and data collection and alike. And most recently, there seems to be a belief within the Trump administration that it's a program that is, I guess, not needed. We're not sure. It seems it's on its way down a path to be cut. And here to talk to us about it is Dr. Jennifer Evagno from the Health Department of the City of New Orleans. Doc, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So what do we know about what's happening with the violence control program that within the CDC?
Well, the CDC had a really robust injury and violence prevention center. It was one of their major centers. Obviously, the CDC is tasked with protecting public health from a variety of threats. And when we say that violence is a public health crisis, it's because we know that violence is the number one, or shootings, I should say, are the number one cause of death in children under 18. They surpassed car accidents a couple of years ago. That could be accidental, that could be intentional, or for a lot of young people, it's suicide. So if we're talking about the thing that kills children more than anything else, it's certainly something that's worthy of study, research, and really intensive programming and initiatives. And to deprioritize that, really doesn't really fit with wanting to attack it as the serious problem that it is.
Well, do we believe that it's a deprioritization, or is this just a scope issue? Or are they going to line this somewhere else, or is it just a funding matter?
Yeah, that's a really great question. We haven't seen a real targeted strategy in terms of these funding cuts. You know, what we're seeing is that whole fundings and or whole divisions are getting emails saying, you know, your positions are gone, your funding is cut. Some of them might be subsumed under other agencies, but some of them right now, we don't have any indication that they will. So, you know, I'll give you an example for the Violence Prevention Center in particular. They funded a lot of research into the causes of violence and what's successful and what's not, which, you know, really helps you build efficiencies. And our colleagues at Tulane have a really nationally recognized violence prevention institute that received money from the CDC to do this work in New Orleans and the region. And they're finding out that all of the funding, all of the grants that they had look like they're on the chopping block. And so it's not, well, you know, maybe this one was a good investment. Maybe this one we can kind of shave some money off of there, or maybe we'll move this program to something else. It unfortunately seems that in this desire to cut costs, we're really throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And, you know, let's be clear. I think all of us, whether we work in government or the private sector or in our personal lives, we can always find ways to do things more efficiently with the same results for less money. But we don't just sort of stop everything that we're doing, stop spending money on everything to figure out what, you know, what we shouldn't have cut down the road. And, you know, again, unfortunately, I think that's what's happening. Just as these violence prevention research and programs are having some real effect in communities like ours.
So what are some of the successes that we've experienced?
Yeah, so, you know, really what many of us see federal investments in things like violence prevention are seed funding, right? So I don't think anybody should expect that the federal government should pay for all violence prevention. That doesn't make any sense, and that's not a good use of resources. But in our case, 2 years ago, we were awarded a Department of Justice grant for community violence intervention programs. These are evidence-based programs. They've been around for 10 or 20 years. We've had some success with them previously in New Orleans, but they really take an approach to preventing and intervening before the shooting happens. They are really well-liked by law enforcement because that takes the burden off of them, and it's just sort of a different way of stopping violence. So we got $2 million over 3 years to roll out our community violence intervention program. With that money, we were able to leverage other investments that allowed us to fully fund a hospital violence interruption program at our trauma center. So when someone is shot, there are people that respond nearly 24/7 to intervene in the critical moments and to prevent retaliations. And just in 1 year of that program, we know we've at least prevented, you know, or de-escalated 30 potential retaliatory shootings. And then we've also used that seed funding to expand and have our trauma recovery center, which provides for mental health support for victims and families of violence. We then expanded that to our firearm safe storage program, getting additional funding for that. And all of those together add up to a much bigger return on investment than that first DOJ funding. That was the spark, but that helped us really grow this ecosystem that, you know, we're seeing some pretty historic drops in violence in our community. And while all lots and lots and lots of credit needs to be given to law enforcement and what NOPD has been able to do, I think even they will tell you that having these extra pieces in the community made a significant contribution. So again, not expecting the federal government to pick up the tab for everything, but what that money did was allow us to really expand and deepen and improve safety for our residents.
But I hear what you're saying. Let me just play devil's advocate for a moment. And because I mean, I've fought these battles with grant funding in my previous life all the time. We typically did not go into a grant unless we had already figured out a way that we were going to be able to support whatever program we desired to implement after the first initial grant offering. If we were able to get additional monies later, you know, we were the better for it, but fully recognized if we were going to get into something, we had to get into it and we needed to be able to finance it at some point in time. So when we talk about seed funding, it seems to me, I don't know how long we've been involved in this program, but when does seed funding end? I mean, you know, and we're able to stand it up here on a local level, fund it, finance it. I'm a believer in it and what you're talking about. I think it's worthy. I guess from the federal government's perspective is where is my exit strategy? When do I get out?
Right. And that's true for a lot of grants, and that is generally our intent. We need that initial program, though, to prove proof of concept, right? So we need that initial investment to say, okay, here's the model. We're doing it in accordance with the grant. We think this is going to work. We're building upon it. And now in 3 to 5 years, we're going to make sure we have an evaluation that says, you know what, this really worked. Here are the things that worked. Here are different, so that I can then go to either local or state government and say, you know what, we really should do this long term, or to some private source to get private philanthropy or private businesses interested. But without that initial investment, it's really hard to get that sort of startup. So just like, you know, the government gives lots of tax breaks and credits to various industries that it wants to invest in so that, yes, after 3, 5, 10 years, they'll turn a profit and not need government intervention. It's no different in terms of the sort of the social programming that we're talking about.
Yeah, I've been talking about this on my show because I think, you know, Louisiana finds himself in a really precarious position. I know you know a lot about this relative to Medicaid financing and how this is all going to play itself out with CMS and the whole nine yards there. I think we're in for some really tough times. And I think a lot of these programs, we need to get creative, involve ourselves in whatever exotic scheme we need to be able to finance it, because I just don't see these dollars flowing, you know, like they once did when we were facing a $36 trillion debt. If we want to take on that debt in a serious fashion, I just think a lot of this falls out. And, you know, part of the problem with CDC, and I know you know this, they're pretty controversial over the last 3 to 4 years for a whole host of reasons. So they really are not in a position of being favorably looked upon. Not that that's good, bad, or otherwise. I think it's bad in the end. But, you know, every program that they're in, I think people are going to be looking at their scope as to what they're involved in really hard. And I suspect that this won't be the last program that we're worried about.
Yeah, and I agree with you, quite frankly. I know that there are thousands and thousands of really hardworking people at the CDC. Did they make some missteps? Or, you know, are there a lot of maybe political reasons why people might not, you know, want to give them funding? Yes, and I think we all have to live in the reality of that. But I think we've also made a really bad case of talking about the return on investment in some of these. And, you know, I heard you talking about Medicaid and the Medicaid cuts. That's where I think we really need to start talking about what do you get for your federal and your state investment? I mean, you were right on the nose. We have a third of our total population covered with Medicaid, more than half our kids, more than 60% of our pregnant women, and 75% of our nursing home patients are covered with Medicaid. And when you talk about Medicaid, that's 90% coming from the federal government and 10% from the state. So when Medicaid goes away, and we see this in states that haven't expanded Medicaid, rural hospitals close at an alarming rate. Nursing homes have trouble staying afloat. Pregnant women don't get the same kind of coverage, right? Kids and adults who for the vast majority are working don't get coverage. So that fund, you know, that money has to come from somewhere to treat those patients, right? And so it comes increasingly out of either state budgets or, you know, local budgets. So while I think that we need to really say, what do these programs do for our economy? In terms of Medicaid, that pays an awful lot of money to our physicians, nurses, nursing home workers, pharmacists, that if that goes away, we're going to have not just the health outcomes, but the economic outcomes. So do we need to look at how can we do these most efficiently in the face of a trillions and trillions of dollars deficit? Yes. But do we need to slash them indiscriminately without thought for the consequences downstream? I mean, I think we're seeing that when you do things indiscriminately, the economy will react in a way that's not very favorable.
No, I don't disagree with you at all, and I think you're right. I mean, you know, my disappointment is it doesn't seem that we've done enough of our due diligence in the alignments. I have no problem with reengineering and, you know, a department right-sizing it or otherwise, figuring out what scope is. But there's got to be data backing it up, and you got to be able to evaluate that data and make the case so that everybody has a clear understanding of the path that we're going down. And I get the sense that we've not done that. I agree with you totally. Right. It may be that this program would have survived. Maybe not. Who knows? But, right. You know, that's the reason you go through the exercise, so to speak. Well, we'll continue to monitor this. And if you have any other further information, let us know. We'll get you on and we'll talk about it. Dr. Jennifer Evagno, New Orleans Health Department, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Neil. Bye-bye.
We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Hey, everyone. Quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know, I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Otani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Some people follow the rules, I break them. I'm Soraya, and on Rule Breakers, we talk to the rebels who do things their way. Listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So a lot of folks are asking on the text line, you know, what is this all about? Well, what they're trying to do is find enough cuts to be able to fund and finance the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. I supported that bill. I like a lot of provisions in that bill. I think it was provisions that were favorable to the state of Louisiana in many ways. And they expire as sunset December 31st of 2025. So the clock is ticking and the Congress doesn't have much time to be able to vote on that continuation. Of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, unless they can find some cuts to be able to pay for this, to be able to pay for the extension. So that is one of the motivations of this exercise that we're going through at the present time. And one of the things that I think is favorable to the state of Louisiana and our cities and our parishes is that, you know, prior to one of the things that the 2017 bill did was limit SALT exemptions, state and local taxes. So folks that live in high taxed states and localities, municipalities like New York City, that's decided to fund and finance all kinds of things that we would never even consider in the state of Louisiana, the city of New Orleans or otherwise. They get the benefit of writing those state and local taxes off their federal income taxes. So they get a larger share of what they're paying in taxes, especially if they are filing an itemized tax return, which there are far greater numbers of folks. It's a bigger jurisdiction, but there's more wealth there that itemizes their tax returns, and they get to write off a larger share of against their income. And putting a limit on that and having the item, the deductions available and a cap on that, I think works to our benefit. And, you know, they're fighting hard to have that expire for that one reason. They want those SALT exemptions back. They want to be able to write off a larger portion of their state and local taxes against their federal income. And that's the battle that has been brewing in Congress now between predominantly blue cities and all others, because those cities happen to have the highest tax rates. They're funding and financing things that we just would not do here and have not done historically. So that's the landscape behind this battle that's going on and this rush to finding enough cuts and enough of these different agencies to be able to finance the extension of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. We'll be right back. Stay with us.